for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The commander of U.S. combined forces in South Korea warned North Korea yesterday to halt its provocation. Tensions between North and South Korea are nothing new. This latest episode has raised fears one misstep could lead to all-out war. Joining me in the studio to talk about events on the peninsula, options the U.S. and its allies have to punish North Korea, and why China might hold the key to resolving the crisis. Here in the studio, Ambassador Wendy Sherman, former special advisor to President Clinton and to Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, Michael Green. He served on President George W. Bush's National Security Council, and Kurt Campbell. He's Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs. He's just returned from a trip with Secretary Clinton to China and South Korea. And finally, joining us from NPR's New York City studio, Leon Siegel. He's director of the Northeast Asia Cooperative Security Project. We do look forward to hearing your questions, comments. Join us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Kurt Campbell, if I could start with you, having just returned from this trip, how concerned should we be about the tensions between North and South Korea?
Well, first of all, good morning, Diana. It's terrific to be with you and our guests here in the studio. As you just indicated, Secretary Clinton has returned last night from a seven-day visit to Japan, China, South Korea, during which discussions about the situation on the peninsula and the tragic sinking of the Cheonan, the South Korean frigate, those discussions figured prominently in all our discussions. I think that obviously the United States remains concerned by developments on the peninsula. Our conversations with the South Korean leadership, however, President Im Yong-bak, were frankly deeply reassuring. He has approached this crisis with a calm and a statesmanship that I think serves his country very well. The only country that is really issuing blood-curdling threats is North Korea. I think some of this is for show right now. The most important thing is to work diplomatically and closely with South Korea, China, and Japan on an international effort to make clear that such actions by North Korea cannot be tolerated and that there must be consequences for what's transpired.
What kind of consequences are you talking about when you say that such actions cannot be tolerated? Does it mean that North Korea could be punished for the sinking of the ship?
Well, if you look at what President Im Yong-bak laid out earlier this week, a series of economic and political steps, which are quite serious, and I think will take will level a very serious shot financially and economically and politically against the regime. I think you will also see the United States and South Korea working with other states in consultation and coordination in the Security Council. We're hopeful that China will work with us. We discussed this matter in great detail with them in Beijing, and I think they understand the gravity of the situation. And the United States is also in the midst of a serious review of all aspects of our activity on the peninsula, and I think you will see also joint military activities between the United States and South Korea. I don't think there will be any doubt but that there will be consequences and greater solidarity as a consequence of these developments.
Kurt Campbell, he's Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs. Ambassador Sherman, how likely is it that China is going to work with the U.S. to bring about some easing of these tensions?
I think that Secretary Clinton used a very important phrase in all of this, and that's called strategic patience. And with China, one needs strategic patience because their process of deliberation takes a little bit of time. I think at the end of the day, they will be joining the international community. They're in a very difficult position. They probably don't have unanimity within their own government apparatus. China is facing a succession in 2012 that has a tremendous impact on everybody sort of positioning themselves for the future. China doesn't want to collapse because they don't want North Koreans coming over their border. At the same time, they do not want a nuclear peninsula. And they do understand, I think, and from the very detailed discussions that were held, that North Korea has taken a very belligerent and a very assertive and aggressive stance here with the sinking of the Shenan, and that there have to be consequences.
Michael Green, what do you see as possible consequences?
Well, as both Kurt and Wendy said, there's going to have to be and there will be a strengthening of U.S., Korean, and I think also Japanese defense posture. The South Koreans, for example, have stated that they will not tolerate North Korean ships in their sea lanes. There will also be economic consequences. The Security Council, I think, is the real pivot in all this, though. And I agree with everything Wendy said, but I think the Chinese have grown comfortable with the idea that they can maintain a relationship with both its traditional ally, North Korea, and its major trading partner on the peninsula, South Korea. They've not had to choose. And from the South Korean, and I think the U.S. perspective, they've got to choose. They welcomed Kim Jong-il, the leader of North Korea, to China after this attack, even though the South Korean president directly asked the Chinese leaders not to. If they don't side with a Security Council resolution that condemns the attack, it will be a very bad sign about a schism, a split in Northeast Asia, which will make it harder for us to deter North Korea, and I think will have implications for broader peace and security among the major powers. So I'd say it's at best 50-50. We'll get China on board for all the complicated reasons that you've heard.
Leon Siegel, turning to you in New York, how is North Korea likely to react if you have the United States, South Korea, Japan, China somehow teaming up with some sort of staged reaction to North Korea's behavior?
I think in two words, not well. look, punishment, punitive sanctions, even if justifiable, won't prevent another Chonan any more than it has stopped North Korea from making nuclear weapons in the past. I am not entirely reassured by what's going on. I think you have self-righteous anger on both sides for understandable reasons, and that's trouble here. We are now we've had this policy of strategic patience, as Wendy said. Basically, what that's done is conceded the initiative to both North and South Korea. And now, instead of scuttling that policy, the administration seems to be raising the stakes, supporting South Korea's efforts to punish North Korea. Fine. Okay, but then adopting what South Korea's president calls proactive deterrence, stepping up naval patrols, threatening to preempt militarily, blockading North Korean shipping. All of that risks more firefights. And I think we need to think hard now about trying to calm things down to avoid dangerous escalation.
How do you respond to that, Kurt Campbell?
I actually don't think it's right. I think if you listen carefully and look at what the South Korean leadership has made clear, they are still keeping the door open for a possible interaction with North Korea and diplomacy with them. What we have just witnessed, though, is an outrage, and there really is no moral equivalence. There isn't a situation where North Korea can or should be aggrieved. This was an unprovoked attack against South Korea, and I think we just have to be very clear about that. what we just met yesterday with the South Korean president. He, in very measured tones, suggested that there had to be consequences, but everyone understood that maintenance of peace and stability on the peninsula is the number one goal. He understands that. He has no desire to ratchet up tensions. He indicated that in the right time that there can be diplomacy with North Korea. But one of the things he did say, and I think it was a powerful statement, is that we just can't return to the negotiating table for talk's sake. There has to be a change in the way North Korea conducts itself in terms of diplomatic engagements. And they have to be serious about denuclearization, serious about a different kind of relationship with South Korea. To date, we see no sign of that change in attitude. And I think, frankly, what we are seeing from South Korea is the most responsible behavior that we could ever ask for in an ally and a friend. And so we're, frankly, quite proud to stand with them in this very difficult matter.
Wendy Sherman, proactive deterrence, blockading, is that going to achieve what the U.S. is hoping for?
I agree with Kurt. I was in Seoul last week myself, and I thought that the South Korean president was taking a very measured but firm approach to North Korea, understanding the need for peace and stability. I think we have to think about this in sequences. First, there has to be a reaction to what was an aggressive and uncalled for action by North Korea. So in the short term, it's going to be a very rocky road, and probably for the next few months leading up to the fall, it'll be rocky. Then there's going to be a midterm where there'll be a reconsideration. And I think finally, what's most important is that the Obama administration, all of us, have to step back and think about what the broad strategy is to head to a different place.
Ambassador Wendy Sherman, Vice Chair of the Albright-Stonebridge Group, will take a short break. When we come back, further talk, your calls, your email. Stay with us. And we're talking about growing tensions between North and South Korea. Here in the studio, Ambassador Wendy Sherman. She served in the Clinton administration. Michael Green served in the George W. Bush administration. Kurt Campbell is Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs. He's just returned from the region with Secretary of State Clinton, and on the line with us from New York, Leon Siegel. He's director of the Northeast Asia Cooperative Security Project. We have an email here from Ira, who says, have there been previous skirmishes in the area of the recent torpedoing of the South Korean ship? Have South Korean naval ships fired on North Korean vessels in the past few months? Kurt Campbell.
This has been a scene of tension for decades. The demarcation line through the sea is disputed by both sides, and there have been incidents previously. So this is not unexpected. This is by far and away the most serious incident we've seen, and in many respects is completely unprovoked because there was no doubt but that the South Korean vessel was clearly below the demarcation line. But I do acknowledge, and I think we all understand, that there are periodic tensions along the DMZ and also in the seaways between North and South Korea.
Leon Siegel, why is the North doing this now, in your view?
I agree with Kurt Campbell that there should be no moral equivalence here. What the North Koreans did was a clear act of aggression. It was in South Korean waters. But we have to acknowledge the importance of this dispute over the sea borders. In 2007, at the summit between Kim Jong-il and Lee Myung-bak's predecessor, the president of South Korea, there was an agreement to provide for negotiations on establishing a joint fishing area in the disputed waters in the Yeop, what the Koreans call the East Sea, and also to provide naval confidence-building measures. And I think had we done that, pursued that, there's a chance we could avoid more Chonans. Instead, when Lee Myung-bak took over, he was determined to show North Korea who's boss, and he walked away from that agreement. There was a war of words for months. And then in November 2009, a North Korean ship in the disputed waters was fired on, a warning shot by the South Koreans. Who knows what the North Korean commander thought, because he opened up, and then the South Koreans destroyed that ship, and there were a number of casualties. Some 17 days after that, Kim Jong-il goes with his high command to a Navy base and orders the Navy to train a quote, this is from North Korean sources, a do-or-die unit of sea heroes. I think the Chonan was directly avenging the November attack and ordered directly by Kim Jong-il in November, and the order was just carried out in March.
You're shaking your head, Kurt Campbell.
First of all, it's one of the most difficult things in global politics is try to glean the reasons why North Koreans do anything on the global stage. And I think there have been a number of questions. Some have suggested this has to do with succession politics in North Korea. Some have suggested it is about anger towards South Korea because of these specific border-related issues. Others believe that it is an indication of dissatisfaction that the United States and South Korea have not been more forthcoming at the negotiating table. I think what's clear is that because of the way the North Korean system works, we really actually cannot know for sure. And we must, in fact, respond to the act rather than what we think are the motivations behind it.
Michael Green, what does North Korea want?
Well, I think first we have to be careful not to lay the blame for this in any way on the South Korean government. North Korea has agreed to these kind of confidence-building measures with the South in the past, going back to the early 90s. It's the North Korean side that has refused to engage in any sort of confidence-building. The Lee Myung-bak government in South Korea came in and said, we're going to expect reciprocity. We'll give aid. In fact, he promised considerable aid if the North is forthcoming on nuclear issues, on terrorism, and so forth. The war of words was mostly Pyongyang lambasting Lee Myung-bak for not giving free handouts. I think this episode, there are clashes in this region every few years. This one's different for two important reasons, I would argue. One is the succession struggle. There is a brittleness and an insecurity about the inability of Kim Jong-il to successfully anoint his third son, Kim Jong-un. And I think they're trying to prove in desperate ways his bravado. The second factor is, and we don't know this for sure yet, but this is the first incident since North Korea tested nuclear weapons. And what we don't know, but what is worrisome, is whether the North thinks it can now with impunity do these kinds of attacks because it can deter us because it now has a nuclear weapons capability.
At the same time, Wendy Sherman, how do you respond to Leon Siegel's assertion that the South Korean leader came in with his own agenda, pushing as hard as he could.
What I would say is that even though South Korea shifted policy from the previous government, it still reached out a hand to North Korea. In fact, the remaining cornerstone of the relationship is the Kaesong Industrial Project. And even though some South Korean officials were deported after this recent incident, thousands of South Koreans still go to work at Kaesong every day and did yesterday and did today because it is one of the only legal avenues for hard currency for the North Korean regime. So it is not all downside. And I think what's very important here is not only that we not see moral equivalency, and just for the record, only one person was killed and three wounded in that November 2009 skirmish around the northern limit line. But what I think is most important for all of us here is to start to think very carefully, I'm sure the administration is, about where we're headed here. The six-party talks, although they may be a useful framework for security discussions in Northeast Asia, is probably not going to get us where we want to go. That doesn't mean they should be scuttled when we finally get through this short and medium-term process. But we need to think more broadly about where we're headed here. In my own view, China has to begin to have a different view of North Korea, no longer the buffer state it needed at the end of the Korean War. And we're about, on June 25th, to get to the 60th anniversary of the Korean War. North Korea sometimes takes actions around anniversaries, so we all want to be vigilant. But I think that we all need to think more broadly about what the forward-going strategy is going to be here.
Kurt Campbell, can anything be accomplished without the help of China in regard to North Korea?
China plays a critical role on the peninsula, has historic ties with North Korea and also growing economic ties with the South. I think what has troubled them the most over the course of the last several months is a growing anger and alienation in South Korea about China's attempts to try to have it both ways, to play the middle of the road. And I think, as Mike Green rightly pointed out, we're making clear to our Chinese interlocutors that on this occasion, they're going to have to be with us. Now, the truth is we've had some success in the past, just in the recent past. We've been able to work with China on Iran at the United Nations. And also, remember, it was just last year that we were able to get China to support the United Nations on very serious sanctions against North Korea because of their nuclear weapons program and their detonations. And so we have some confidence that we're going to be able to work with them in the short term. But I think the point that Wendy raised is an extremely important one, and that, in fact, we need to begin to think about the future and about the kinds of deliberations that are likely to produce a Northeast Asia that is at peace and that promises to reduce the tensions on the Korean Peninsula. And I will say that we are involved in those internal deliberations as we speak.
Does Beijing agree that North Korea provoked this incident?
I think it would be fair to say that there are divisions. We were in China for 3 days. We met at every possible level, both civilian, military, party officials. We saw a substantial amount of uncertainty, frankly, lots of questions about the investigation. My strong sense was that they had not developed a line yet, so to speak. They hadn't decided what their governmental position will be, and that they were struggling a little bit, quite frankly. My sense is that quietly there is a recognition that North Korea was behind this and that they're going to have to subtly shift their position. The question will be whether South Korea, the United States, and Japan together can work to ensure that China takes a more overt stance that underscores both the seriousness of what has just transpired with the sinking of the Chonan, but also sets the table for a different kind of interaction with Pyongyang going forward.
Leon Siegel, how likely do you believe that to be?
I think the Chinese do not want to alienate the United States and will do some things at the UN in order to support certainly condemnation, maybe even sanctions. But I do think the Chinese are focused on how you maintain stability on the peninsula, and therefore I doubt that they are going to like to hear American officials talking about we need to move away from six-party talks. That's not in our interest, by the way. The last I looked, Yongbyon, the plutonium facilities at Yongbyon, the reactor to make more plutonium, has been shut down. That could restart. So we need to keep that shut down, number one. Number two, we're going to need a peace process. Not immediately. Wendy Sherman's quite right. We've got to go through a phase. But we have to think hard about how we manage the Korean Peninsula end of this, meaning we don't want to have another Chonan. And I think the Chinese are going to emphasize the need for a peace process on the Korean Peninsula that involves them, us, as well as the two Koreas. I think that's important to keep a focus on. Whether we do it all in six-party is not important. Mm-hmm. We need to work our way out of this 6 months from now.
Michael Green.
Well, Leon is right that the Chinese preferred next step is to resume the six-party talks and focus on a peace process because they want to stabilize the situation. They're worried about instability causing refugees, all legitimate, you know, concerns for the Chinese. But I think this Chonan incident has also underscored or unearthed a really profound difference in how the United States, Japan, and Korea on the one hand and China on the other hand look at the future of the peninsula. I think the default position in among the Democratic allies is that North Korea is not going to give up nuclear weapons and that ultimately peace and stability is going to require unification. And that means a democratic Korea under Seoul. And that is an outcome that the Chinese want to avoid because they want a buffer. They don't want a democratic pro-U.S. ally on their border. So this Chonan incident, I think the Chinese tactically do want to move in some directions to maintain good relations with Seoul and Washington, but it really has unearthed a fundamentally different view about where we see the successful outcome of all this coming in the long run.
Michael Green, he's professor of international relations at Georgetown University, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We'll open the phones now, 800-433-8850. First to New London, Connecticut. Good morning, Mike. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you for the opportunity.
Surely.
It seems to me that there need not be necessarily a military or a sanctioned-based solution from this problem if the North Korean government were willing to accept responsibility for its actions and then hold, perhaps, maybe as a scapegoat, the submarine commander to fault. And perhaps this is a bit Pollyannish or optimistic on my part, but it seems that such an acknowledgement and such an action might serve as a good first step toward resuming negotiations, at least in terms of food policy, if not in terms of, like, larger atomic policy.
Wendy Sherman.
I think the caller has a wonderful idea. We would all be thrilled if, in fact, Kim Jong-il took that out. South Korea was very careful in talking about the investigation, not to blame Kim Jong-il directly for Chonan, to give him space to do exactly what the caller has suggested. But quite frankly, having been to North Korea, having met with Kim Jong-il, I would be surprised if he took that action at this moment because it would be conceding from his perspective much too much, and he is trying to pave the way for his son with the military in North Korea as part of this whole complex.
All right. To Michelle in Baltimore, Maryland. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask your panelists about Secretary Clinton's speech today. I know she's unveiling the diplomatic arm of the Obama administration's national security policy. What do we expect to hear from her regarding approaches to this North and South Korea tension specifically, if at all?
Kurt Campbell.
Yes, thank you very much. She's speaking this morning at the Brookings Institution to roll out the national security strategy of the United States. And I think you'll hear a lot about how the United States wants to work with other countries in a variety of situations, like the preservation of peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula, but also in other venues like new security challenges such as climate change. I think what the Secretary has said yesterday in Seoul, Korea, was really the signpost, if you will, of how the United States wants to go about its positioning on the Korean Peninsula. We want to be patient in how we work with specific countries, particularly South Korea. We believe it. It's critical that China be on board and that they understand the gravity of the situation, as both Mike and Wendy and Leon have underscored. And I do want to say very clearly that the United States still is committed to a process of diplomacy with North Korea. And I think if that can be accomplished in the six-party framework, that's fine. What we're looking for is not so much venues of dialogue, but actually a change in how North Korea has undertaken its diplomacy. And most of the time, it has been to extort either food or fuel or other kinds of humanitarian.
All of which they need.
They do need.
Desperately.
Exactly. And I think the position of the United States is to provide humanitarian support, but also to be very clear with the regime that if it expects to have a different kind of economic or political future, then they must change in terms of the conduct of their national security policy.
Kurt Campbell, he's Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs. We'll take a short break. And we'll be right back. Thanks for listening.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day at wallacefoundation.org. By the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting efforts to find and fight the causes of homelessness, on the web at melvilletrust.org. By the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, whose Kids Count special report addresses the importance of reading by the end of third grade, at aecf.org. This is NPR.
Here in the U.S., tap water is free, natural, and available just about everywhere. But Americans spend billions of dollars on bottled water every year. What's behind our thirst for bottled water? The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And just to inform our listeners, Kurt Campbell, Assistant Secretary of State, had to leave. He came back to the United States from his trip with Secretary of State Clinton very, very early this morning. So we have excused him. At the same time, Ambassador Wendy Sherman, Michael Green, Leon Siegel are still with us. We'll go to an email from, let's see, Chaz, who says, please ask your guests about the options that can be taken short of military confrontation and the likelihood that any of those steps would have the desired effect on the North Koreans. Leon Siegel.
Well, I'd say two parts to this. One is that there are certain defensive precautions we ought to be taking. One of them is to improve the undersea detection system. We have a system called SOSUS that ought to be provided to the South Koreans. That won't fix things immediately, but that's not an offensive threat. That doesn't get you into another naval clash. That's something we ought to be doing. On the other hand, I think we really have to recognize that there is a dispute over the waters. And we have to make it also possible for the North Koreans to accept responsibility for what they did in attacking the Chonan. There's no excuse for that. But you have to make these things possible. And the way you do that is by sending the right signals. Not right now. I understand. We're moving to sanctions. But I think you really have to think about working your way out of it. The history of this is, when we disengage from North Korea, and let me say strategic patience is a synonym for disengagement. That's what this administration's been doing. There's always trouble. Sometimes there's trouble when we engage. I understand that. But there is always trouble when we disengage. And if you want to change North Korea, the Chinese strategy of sustained engagement has been bringing about very slowly some important changes inside North Korea. You would not have had the reaction to the currency revaluation without Chinese goods flooding the North Korean markets. I think we have to think about a long-term strategy for change and not talk about collapse, because they're nowhere near collapse. That economy's been growing for 10 years.
Leon, what would be the positive signals that you would wish to send to North Korea, given the sinking of the Chonan?
Well, I think you have to figure out a way to talk to them, whether it's through intermediaries or you have to start to send a signal that they need to be punished for this, okay, but punishment is not the end of the game. They're going to react badly to punishment. And I think there are all kinds of ways to send those signals, but we need to do that. And we need to do that not too far from now.
How do you?
We can't wait 6 months for that.
How do you send signals, Wendy Sherman?
I do think Leon's right. There are a lot of ways to send signals. I think, again, this has to be staged, however. There have to be consequences for the action that North Korea has taken. Even Secretary Clinton has said that, we will re-engage if North Korea is ready to, in fact, take responsibility for this and begin to deal in serious ways with its nuclear weapons posture and with obeying and following international rules. So in some ways, this is not dissimilar to the Obama administration, sort of on the one hand this, on the other hand that. And it goes all the way back to the process led by former Secretary of Defense Bill Perry, which is to say to North Korea, you have a fundamental choice to make. And that fundamental choice is either to move towards peace and stability, in which case there will be normalization, a lot of good things can come your way, or if you move in the other direction, which they have consistently, pretty consistently done, with some ups and downs, it's going to mean consequences and you're going to be further isolated. But the one other thing I want to add is I don't think strategic patience means non-engagement. In fact, Steve Bosworth, the special envoy, has been to Pyongyang during this first year and a half of the Obama administration. Six-party talks have taken place several times during that time. We are just in a difficult moment right now.
Here is a rather blunt email from Andrew, who says, why is everyone dancing around the fact that the sinking of the Chonan by North Korea is an act of war? If there is to be support of any harsh response, whatever that could be, on behalf of the international community, the people of the world must understand this was not simply an incident. Michael.
Andrew has a very good point. We're not engaged in social work here. We're not trying to convince an unruly teenager to think about his future and his college. And this is a country that has clearly made its choices, in my view. There's a role for diplomacy, but we can't go back to business as usual. I would connect some important dots here. North Korea tested nuclear weapons twice. They were caught transferring nuclear capability to Syria. They've been caught transferring weapons to Hezbollah, Hamas, and Burma. They are building and launching and testing missiles with the clearly stated aim of mounting nuclear weapons on those missiles. They have criminal syndicates around the world involved in counterfeiting drug transfer. In other words, this is part of a pattern and an expanding pattern of North Korean dangerous behavior. And that's why it's so important to not just go back to business as usual, to make it clear that there are going to be consequences. When you ask about concrete steps, there are things we can also be doing to tighten our ability to intervene against these transfers of dangerous materials, to implement more seriously with the Chinese and others, the existing sanctions. We really have to show North Korea that all of these activities, not just the Chonan, are going to lead to a much, much tougher net around them and containment around them. And China's got to be part of that. And I think that's why Secretary Clinton was, by all accounts, pretty tough with the Chinese.
At the same time, couldn't tougher sanctions make North Korea even more aggressive? Ambassador Sherman.
There is no doubt. North Korea has nothing else to worry about. They don't have to worry about Iraq or Afghanistan or climate change. They don't particularly care about feeding their people or creating prosperity in their country. This is it. This is the only bargaining chip they have, is their nuclear weapons capability and their long-range missile growing capability, which is quite serious, as the email writer pointed out. So what is very difficult here is both to make them understand that there are consequences. It will lead to further isolation, but that has to be done with the entire international community. Mm-hmm. As long as they have avenues to continue on as they are continuing on, it is very hard to find the solidarity that gets them to change behavior. And at the same time, one has to have a handout, not a handout in terms of goods and materiel, but a handout for serious and real engagement if indeed they want to come into the international community and change their ways.
All right. To Little Rock, Arkansas. Good morning, Mo. You're on the air.
Hi. My question is this. With North Korea emphatically denying any operation dealing with this, and as early as yesterday, even the BBC having a report that this could have been a leftover debt charge from the Korean War, my question is threefold. One, how do we know it was a torpedo? How do we know North Korea did this? And three, if they're doing this for a military posture, how do they gain by denying it?
Leon Siegel.
Well, I think if you read what they said in the past and indeed what they did on a TV broadcast late in April, they've given indications they've done this. They may even have been hinting at a way to take responsibility when they called for sending their own investigators to Seoul to look at the evidence. It probably was a stall, but it may have been a different game. I think down the road, their taking responsibility for this is one of the key openers, and I think we have to figure out a way to make it easier for them, not to demand apologies and insist that you won't discuss an apology. I think you have to find a way, not maybe today, but certainly in the next few weeks, to walk this cat back. That's in our interests. We are in the middle out in the Korean waters. We don't want any more Koreans. We certainly don't want any more South Koreans killed. And we need to find a way to defuse this.
But what about the fact that the U.S. and South Korea are planning new military exercises? How is that going to affect this entire brouhaha, if you will, Leon?
Well, I would make sure that those exercises don't take place in the contested waters at a minimum. I do think it's prudent to do exercises at some point, but I wouldn't do it this week. Unfortunately, the South Koreans did one this week, but they didn't do it in the contested waters exactly. I think the real trouble will come if the North Koreans, and I hope they won't, but they're apt to test the South Korean. South Korea essentially said, we're not going to allow you to sail your freighters through our waters. That was done under an agreement reached in 2004 between the two governments. And I think we have to worry about what the South Koreans would do if a North Korean freighter came there. I would hope that our commanders are fully briefed on the rules of engagement by the South. I think we don't want to have another shooting incident here. I think that won't help us to defuse this.
All right. To San Antonio, Texas, Jeff, you're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Surely.
I realize that this, in terms of sanctions, is simply a poke in the eye, but I recall some time back when we had a skirmish with North Korea that the personal assets and of the upper leadership were somehow suppressed or frozen, and it seemed to have quite an impact to the extent that Kim Jong-il couldn't even get his Courvoisier. And I wondered if that is on the table as a possible sanction.
Michael Green.
Well, the Bush administration caught the North Koreans laundering money, tens of millions of dollars, through banks around the world from counterfeit money and various illegal schemes, and used U.S. law to sanction those banks involved and froze up all the North Korean money. And the caller is right. It got Kim Jong-il's attention. And we, I think, made an enormous mistake in 2008 when we returned a large amount of that money to the North Koreans in order to try to get diplomacy going again. And that kind of behavior is what I think Pyongyang is counting on us and the South Koreans to do again this time. But the caller is absolutely right. There are still ways that we could slow down the money flow to Kim Jong-il. He doesn't get this cash for his people. He uses it to keep the elite loyal and to pay for nuclear weapons programs and his cognac. And, you know, there is an argument we should let him keep drinking the cognac, but we could certainly crack down.
Michael Green, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Leon Siegel, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, look, the fact is, it does get North Korea's attention when you do the sanctions. But Kim Jong-il can get the money he needs from legitimate trade, which has been growing for years. This is an authoritarian regime. They can get money in lots of ways. Yes, we should want to stop their illicit activities. But anyone who thinks that the sanctions worked, North Korean trade grew while those sanctions on their banks, while their hard currency accounts were frozen. North Korean trade grew immensely, so they were getting around the financial measures. There are lots of ways to move money around the world, unfortunately, not through Citicorp. So I think, you know, that measure was taken by the North as a political sign that we still were treating them like an enemy, but it had no discernible economic impact whatsoever. And that's a sad fact.
I obviously disagree.
Go ahead.
Well, the trade increase with China, and Leon is right, that is part of the reason why the North Koreans are feeling emboldened and a major reason why we have to use whatever leverage we can to get the Chinese to change their approach. But the money that was interdicted in this sting operation, basically, was cash going right to Kim Jong-il and going right from Kim Jong-il to generals and loyalists he needed to stay in power. And the North Koreans were worried about it. And there's much more that could be done.
I gather, Mike, that you believe there are three reasons why China won't do anything.
Well, China has, it'd be unfair to say the Chinese have not shifted their position over the past decade. They have. But while we were focused on denuclearization, China didn't have to make hard choices. They kept pressure on the North Koreans to get them to come to the table, and that was about it. Now it's becoming quite obvious North Korea does not intend to give up nuclear weapons and that they are moving into more dangerous provocations. So China's fairly minimalist role is insufficient, and it is becoming obvious, and that's why I think within the Chinese leadership there are big debates, that they also have to wonder whether it's in their interests to continue business as usual. They trade $2 billion with the North, $200 billion with the South, and the South is saying, you've got to make a choice. So you know, it's going to be a very interesting time, and as I said, it's a 50-50 prospect, but we do have a chance to start shifting China's stance, which will give us much more purchase on this problem in the future.
Wendy Sherman.
I think China is very critical to this. China needs to decide that the buffer state of the 1950s is no longer what it needs. with South Korea being a major trading partner, with Japan even being a major trading partner for China, that the world is a different world than it once was. China's own economic growth and standing in the world is quite different and growing and more important. And what China has a difficulty with is 2012. They face a succession. 2012 is a big year. We face our presidential election. South Korea faces their presidential election. It's the 100th birthday of Kim Il-sung, the founder of North Korea. So there's a lot that's going to happen over the next 2 years. I hope it happens in a positive direction.
Last word for you, Leon Siegel.
I agree with Wendy Sherman. We have to turn this around well before 2012 and see whether we can get anywhere with an engagement strategy. The fact that many people believe the North Koreans won't give up their nuclear weapons is irrelevant here. Until we know that by negotiating with them, we should not reach premature conclusions. And if we can stop their nuclear program by negotiations, that would be an advantage, too. We don't want them to make any more plutonium.
Leon Siegel, Michael Green, Wendy Sherman, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.